here to speak,
sandwiched between famous physicists. I'm certainly not a physicist myself, as I will prove in the next few minutes. So I'm going to talk about symplectic automorphisms of hyperkähler manifolds. And let me get started. No, we'll go down. Good. Okay. So this is Mukai's theorem. So this Matthew Moonshine has sort of two inputs, which are sort of independent. This Mukai's theorem, which was a while ago, and then there's the work of Iguchi and Uguri and others on elliptic genus Jacobi forms. So Mukai's theorem is about symplectic automorphisms of a K3 surface. Okay, I'm just going to, probably a lot of you know what this theorem says. Let's take the 24 letters that are permuted by M24. And of course, M24 contains the group M23. Actually, one of the themes of this talk that I'm giving is that I don't ever have to say M24, actually. What I'm talking about will, in the long run, not have anything to do with M24. So don't let this make you think that it does. In any case, M23 occurs in the conclusions here. So I take the set of subgroups of M23, which happen to have at least 5 orbits on this set. And Mukai's theorem says if you take a finite group of symplectic automorphisms of a K3 surface, then there are a surprisingly restricted number of possibilities for what that group can be. Namely, it's either one of these, well, it is one of these groups. And conversely, if you take any one of these groups, you can find a K3 surface whose group of symplectic automorphisms is one of these groups. So that's Mukai's theorem. So I want to think about ways you could generalize this result. So in this talk, I'm going to discuss an extension of Mukai's theorem to some higher dimensional Calabi-Yau manifolds. And I should say that I'm by no means a geometer. So if there are any technical questions about geometry, the answer is probably going to be, I don't know. Okay. But in any case, so what is K3N? You take a product of N copies of X, and here I'm going to take X to be a K3 surface. And I want to take a quotient by Sn, but if I just did that to begin with, I would create a lot of singularities. And the way you can avoid that is by blowing up the bad points and then modding out by Sn. And it won't really matter in this talk what that means. But the bottom, this goes back to Grothendieck, this idea. This thing is a hyperkähler manifold of complex dimension 2n. You get dimension 2 for each copy of X. And this is sometimes called the Hilbert scheme of n points on X. And it's a Calabi-Yau manifold. It's a hyperkähler manifold, which means its holonomy is in SPn. And it's got complex dimension 2n. And of course, if n is 1, we get K3. So I want to think about, and this is joint work with Gerald Hearn that I'll mention again in a minute. I want to think about how to generalize Mukai's theorem to K3N. So what kind of symplectic groups of automorphisms can you get? That's the question. So there's a good chance that we can answer this question, although it's not been fully answered yet. I think we're pretty close. So I'm going to deal here with the case N equals 2. And I should have apologized from the outset because I'm actually going to explain how to prove a theorem here. I'm not sure if that's allowed, actually, in the perimeter. But with the chairman's approval, that's what I'm planning to do. So before I get into the statement of the theorem, let's just see the sort of things that are involved. Okay. So the geometry of even K3-2, it's tied to K3, but it's more complicated. Okay. So I should say also that I was planning for this talk to be 45 minutes at most, and then I realized that there's an hour, but I probably won't need all the hour, but I'm not sure. So here's the Hodge diamond for K3, and it's 24-dimensional. And of course, the way Mukai proceeded was to show that this 24-dimensional space, or Z module if you want, could be identified with the permutation module for M24. And then you can make various identifications. So when you go to K32, that becomes more of a problem because the Hodge diamond gets much more complicated. So what we're going to do, thanks to the geometers, is concentrate on this line, which is H2. So here it's 22-dimensional. So here it's 23-dimensional. So we acquired an extra dimension. If you go to K3N, this will still be the same. It will be 23-dimensional. So it doesn't increase with N, but the lattice changes in a marginal way with N. Okay, but when you go from 1 to 2, you get this extra dimension in there. Okay, so this is, and again, you can write down the Hodge diamond, but it gets more and more useless to consider it. Okay, so here's the theorem for K32, just with that complication in mind. The theorem says, okay, I'm going to still look at subgroups of M23, but they're going to have 4 orbits, not necessarily at least 5, but at least 4. And it turns out that in the statement of the theorem, we only need to talk about groups with exactly 4. So each of the groups in Mukai's list with 5 orbits is contained in one of these, but it's not actually equal. So we get a different set of groups. And then I've got 2 more groups here. So let me state the theorem. You can see what it says. If you take a finite group of symplectic automorphisms of K32, then it's one of these groups. There are 13 groups in there, isomorphism classes, and there are 2 other groups which are contained in the Conway group. However, they are not contained in M23. Indeed, they're not contained in M24. Okay, so we've got 13 plus 2. So these are the 2 perhaps most interesting ones, and they act on a K32. Because each of these groups, and therefore each of the subgroups, there is a K32 waiting for it to act on. So that's Mukai's theorem for K32. So you don't get many more groups, but you get 2 extra ones that maybe you weren't expecting and that are not contained in M24. And as we go through the discussion of this proof, we'll see that the fact that these groups are in M23, these ones, is really just a coincidence. They've got to be in something. It turns out it's M23. Okay. So all of these groups are contained in the Conway group, the automorphism group of the Leech lattice. And so if you want an umbrella group that contains all the symplectic automorphism groups, then this is the group that you need to look in. And I think if we change a K32 to a K3N, the conclusions of this theorem will be almost the same. We'll have probably just 1 or 2 more groups in there. So I think several people have...
Is there a theorem of Mongardi?
Well, it's a conjecture of Mongardi.
It's a conjecture.
Not a theorem. Okay. So there's a conjecture.
All of these cases will be in Conway. Of a larger end, that's what we expect. There won't be subgroups of the Conway group.
I think you'll get these groups and these 2 and maybe 2 or 3 more.
But the 2 or 3 more will also be subgroups of the Conway
group? Yeah, there'll be S lattice groups.
Yeah. What is an S lattice group?
Sorry?
What is an S lattice?
I will explain what an S lattice is. Certain kind of subgroup in the Conway group. So, these are the groups. There aren't very many. And there's lots of K3s out there, and so it's not so hard to find a K32 for each of these groups. So that's the theorem. And again, as I said, I think most of the ideas, there may be some missing geometric ideas that we still need. And again, the method of proof and this is due to Gerald Hearn and myself, is to quote a lot of geometry and then get to a point where we can prove something. But there's a lot of geometry behind this statement that we had no involvement with. And if there's an obstruction to proving this for K3N in general, it will be geometric, because I think the group theoretic and lattice theoretic parts are sort of well in hand. So there's a similar result due to Matthias, Stefan, and Roberto Volpato. So it's very similar flavor, slightly different statement. It's more of a physical statement. It's about sigma models on K3 preserving n equal to 4. There are no assumptions like that in the theorem that I stated before. But what I want to emphasize is that the sort of conclusions that they come to are very similar. You've got they didn't go into as fine a detail concerning the nature of the groups and whether they actually exist on in this context. That's sort of difficult. But these are the groups that sort of correspond to the M23 up here. So corresponding there, we have these groups, and then we have these are the S lattice groups. Okay, so there's this subdivision into groups that are in M23 and subgroups that are not even in M24. Okay, so this one will definitely act on a K3N, but N will have to be bigger than 2.
How about the other two?
These two already occur. These two already occur in here. So they act on a K3 too.
There is a K3 sigma model of which 2 is the symmetry group.
I mean, if you construct it,
this one here.
I mean, it's not a,
okay.
It's not a conjecture. We've written it down.
Yeah, yeah.
But
no,
that's obviously on the level of the sigma model, not on the level of a geometric.
Okay. Right. I understand.
An asymmetric Z5 orbital.
Right. So, Kepler model or something. So the idea in the way, well, there's a lot of other things in this paper. The idea to prove that, the general idea, and the way to prove this as well, is to prove that if you have any finite group of symplectic automorphisms, it's contained in the Conway group. So the question is, why is it in the Conway group to start with? What does it have to do with a leaf lattice? And once you get that, how can you actually find exactly what the set of G's are that work? So that's what I want to talk about. So we first prove the G's in there, and the rank of the fixed sublattice is going to be at least 4. That's sort of built in this case. And then you try to classify the G. Okay. So what is an S lattice group? So I've got a few sort of technical frames here. Because the experts will be bored by this because they know it. And if you're not an expert, it's probably not going to be very enlightening. But the idea is this. So if we're in the Leech lattice, okay, it's a rank 24 lattice, but of course it's not an orthogonal sum of vectors of squared length 2. It's an even lattice, but you can find in the Conway group sort of you can find 24 mutually orthogonal vectors whose squared length is 8. Okay, and usually we identify these vectors in pairs because we can't tell the difference between a vector and its negative. So a set of 48 vectors consisting of pairs of vectors of squared length 8, which are mutually orthogonal, are called an orthogonal frame. Okay. That's an a coordinate frame, in fact. Yeah, that's the plus. You don't. Yeah, that's a typo, Greg. Thank you. Maybe the minus sign should have been in there somewhere. Yeah. It better be plus 8, otherwise. No. These are vectors in the Leech lattice. Yeah, these are vectors in the Leech lattice, and this is what I should have written. Okay, so you can look at the set of such vectors, the set of coordinate frames, the full Conway group, the automorphism group, is transitive on them, so effectively there's only one, and the stabilizer is this thing called the monomial group. if you write that group out as 24 by 24 matrices, it's plus or minus permutation matrices. The plus or minus comes from changing the sign on some of these, and the permutations are the possible permutations of the 24 pairs, and they're restricted to M24. So that's how M24 comes into the Conway group through that group. It's the group of permutations of a given coordinate frame, okay? Now, the second thing is an old result of Conway that says the following. You do this sort of funny thing, really. You look at lambda mod twice lambda. So you get a finite group of order 2 to the 24, and you look at a coset, an element in here, some coset like that, and you can always choose V such that the inner product of V with itself is at most 8. It's either 0, 4, 6, or 8. Okay, and what this proposition is trying to say is, well, one possibility is that you can pick V to be 0. Another possibility is you cannot pick V to be 0, but you can pick it to have squared length 4. In that case, W is unique up to sine, and this coset contains no vectors of squared length 6 or 8. Similarly, if V can be chosen, or if W can be chosen so its inner product is 6, then again, W is unique up to a sine in this coset, and there are no vectors of squared length 4 or 8 in this coset. And if you can't pick in this coset any vectors of length 4 or 6, you can always pick exactly 48 vectors of squared length 8, and they line a coordinate frame. So this is a very beautiful combinatorial property of the Leech lattice, and it's a fundamental property of many things related to the Conway group, the Leech lattice, and moonshine, and hyper-Kähler manifolds, as far as I can see. Okay, so let's go on. So here's what an S lattice is. So here's my Conway group. So I've got some S lattice. You see, and if I pick a vector in the S lattice, what I've just told you is as follows. I can look at the coset U plus 2 lambda. The inner product of U with itself could be anything, but I can make this equal to V plus 2 lambda, where the inner product of V and V is 0, 4, 6, or 8. That's what I've just tried to explain. So an S lattice has the following property. If you pick any U in it, then you never get 8, and you only get this, this, or this. Okay? And so I also want that not only should V have inner product 0, 4, or 6, but also V should also be in S. And in fact, if I write U as V plus 2W, then U minus V has got to be in S because U and V are, so 2W is in S, and I want W to be in S. It's not necessary to remember these things, but that's the official definition of an S lattice, okay? So such whenever you pick a U, you write it in like that, then the corresponding short vector V also is in S, and half the difference between U and V is also in S. That's an S lattice. Okay, and let me just go back to the statement of the theorem. So the groups that can act on K32 either are in M23 or they fix pointwise an S lattice, one of these S lattices. We know all of those S lattices. We're only interested in the ones of rank 4 or more. There are only 3 of them. Here they are. So this is why one of the stabilizers occurs. This is why one of the stabilizers occurs in the list of theorems, in the list of groups. And this is the one that occurs in Matthias's theorem, but not in ours, because this thing does not act on a K32, as it turns out. Okay, so that's where these two groups are coming from, once you know how to reduce to the Leech lattice context. Okay, so what I want to do is explain how you can do that. So that's what S lattices are about.
So the earlier slide, the 3 to the 1.4. 1 plus 4.2 was 3 to 1 plus 4.2.2 squared or something like that.
Yeah, okay. So This is the full point wise stable of a rank 6 lattice, but I could have a 2 or a 2 squared fixing a sublattice.
Fixing a sublattice.
I can make this group a bit bigger and it will fix a sublattice. Yeah? Okay, so I want to explain, this is where the geometry comes. It's got to come somewhere. How we can reduce this general question about K3n or K32 to something about the Lie to lattice. So let's take H2, the cohomology H2. So if we did not have this factor here, we would have the K3 lattice. Okay? So when we go to K3n, where n's bigger than 1, we get this extra thing here. This is a lattice of rank 1. It's negative definite, generated by a vector of squared length, minus 2 in this case. So in general, it will be minus 2 times some function of n. In fact, I think 2n minus 2, I think is what it is. So it goes up linearly with n. Okay, so the only difference between 2 and n is that this will get a little bit bigger. So in this case, this is just a negative definite A1 root lattice. So this U is a hyperbolic plane. So this is 3 hyperbolic planes, each of rank 2. This is 2 negative E8s. So altogether, we have a 23-dimensional lattice of discriminant 2. Okay?
So I'm a little confused. You said for higher powers of K3, that last minus 2 is going to be...
Yeah, this will change to minus, I think, 2n minus 2?
Minus 2n minus 2. Because that's the...
Minus 2n plus 2.
That's the scalar class of the blow-up mode. Of the,
yeah, I think that's...
Of the product.
I don't quite remember.
Minus 2, but you're saying it's minus 2n.
No,
it grows.
Yeah, it grows with n. Yeah, yeah. So, I think it grows with n.
Geometrically, how do you
understand that? Geometrically, how do you understand that? So there's a canonical integral bilinear form on this, or it is an indefinite lattice. And so here's a hard theorem. So the automorphism group of X, the group of symplectic automorphisms of X, is a subgroup of the orthogonal group of this lattice. So it's like a Torelli theorem. These are hard theorems to prove. So even though, remember, we have a very complicated Hodge diamond, the whole group acts faithfully down here. So that's why we can concentrate on that piece of the Hodge diamond because of this theorem.
I mean, isn't that obvious that there's an embedding? It's injective. That's
it
the
is,
hard.
It's the injection.
That's
yeah,
the hard.
How do we know they're onto automorphism?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean,
no, no. Sure, that's the
it's part. The injection.
It's injective.
It's the,
yeah.
It clearly preserves the. Yeah. Okay. So we got that. Let's take a group acting on X, on our K32, and L is the H2X, and I've got the sublattice, the invariant sublattice of fixed vectors, and I've got the co-invariant lattice, which is the orthogonal complement of the invariant lattice in L. Okay, so this means the set of vectors in L which are orthogonal to LG. So here's another non-trivial theorem. This is a fundamental theorem. This is in Mongardi's thesis from a couple of years ago. So this lattice is negative definite, and it contains no roots. That is to say, there are no vectors in there such that VV is minus 2. So this is fundamental, because if I negate this, I then get a vector whose minimal length is at least 4. And so there's a chance to stick it in the Lie lattice. If we had roots in there, we wouldn't be able to put it in the Lie lattice. So this sort of thing in the past led people like Kondo and others to embed these lattices into Niemeyer lattices where you have roots. But we all know that the Lie lattice is the best lattice to work with if you can. So this theorem will allow us to do that. Now, this is negative definite, you see. So if you just look up at the rank here, that means it's ranked no bigger than 20. So this has got rank at most 20. So now, again, there's a theorem, and I've written Mongardi first. I think he probably was the first to prove a version of this. There are versions due to a number of people, Matthias and Stefan and Roberto and Heibrechts and Gerald and myself. So what does this theorem say? This theorem is why we can reduce the problem to one about the Leech lattice. Namely, this theorem says I can embed the group of finite group of symplectic automorphisms of our K32 into C0, and at the same time, I can embed the negative definite version of this lattice, which is now positive definite with no roots, into the Leech lattice, and I can do it simultaneously so that the action of G on there is preserved. So the image acting on the image of that is isometric to that. Okay, there's some sort of a category of pairs of, and the objects are these, and there's some morphism, and this is a universal object in the category. I mean, lots of ways to say it. Okay. So I can embed the negative of the co-invariant lattice into the Leech lattice. Well, this is the co-invariance of the Leech lattice with respect to G, if I think of G as being in the Conway group. And so this is an isometry. So this lattice and this lattice are isometric, and there's an isomorphism from there to there. So this effectively transfers the problem to one about subgroups of the Conway group acting on the Leech lattice, where this lattice has got rank no more than 20. And since the Leech lattice has rank 24, the fixed sublattice has size at least 4. So that's a familiar physical assumption, of course. So here's how it comes out from this lattice theoretic perspective. Okay, so this reduces us to understanding, to begin with at least, what groups G can be contained in the Conway group, so act on the Leech lattice, and the co-invariant lattice has got dimension no more than 20. So this is where we are, roughly. Roughly speaking, G is now in the Conway group, the rank of the fixed sublattice is at least 4, and roughly speaking, I didn't go into all the details. Either G is contained in this monomial group, that is to say, G fixes one of these coordinate frames, or it doesn't fix a coordinate frame, but then its fixed sublattice is contained in an S lattice. So without being too careful with the details and exactly what I mean here, this is sort of where we are. And what's going to happen is the groups which are contained in here and which have all the other properties we need to act on a K32, will all end up actually inside M23. But it's got nothing whatsoever to do with this group. It's to do with the Leech lattice and the action of G on it. And if it's not in this group, then it can be contained in there, and we've seen there are only a few possibilities. So you can see the screws are already turning. But there's still lots of groups in here. I think in there are 6 million conjugacy classes of two groups. So there's still a lot of groups that we have to look at. Okay, so it's not that finite. It's finite, but it's a lot. Okay, so what do we do once we get to this point? So we have to use some topology. Okay, so I want to consider what conjugacy classes. So again, let me go back. I'm assuming the group G is contained in here. In fact, there or here, but let's just go back to here, and it satisfies this condition. And what can we do? Well, we look at the conjugacy classes, and I say, when can a conjugacy class be contained in the group big G? When can it be contained in there? Well, the fixed sublattice for any element's got to have rank at least 4, because the whole group has fixed sublattice of rank at least 4. So if you look at all these conjugacy classes, only 42 conjugacy classes satisfy that, so we've cut down by 3/4. Okay, so now I've got to look at these 42 conjugacy classes and say, how many of them could possibly show up in my group G? Okay, and you have to use, well, the way this is the other situation where K3N might be harder to deal with, because we need something about the global topology to do with this, to deal with this. Okay, so we're going to use some fixed point theorems of the Atiyah-Singer-Siegel fixed point theorem, actually. A version of this already goes back to Mukai's theorem, the way he proved it. So here's what we're going to do. So this is the equivariant Hirzebruch genus. There are several genera we could have used. Gerald likes the Hirzebruch one since he was his last PhD student. Okay, so this is the these are the cohomology groups that show up in the Hodge diamond here. And so the group acts on these cohomology groups. And so this is some sort of equivariant Euler characteristic. It's called the Hirzebruch chi y genus. Okay, and we can compute, this is a global thing, we can compute it. How can we compute it? Well, it turns out all you need to know is the trace of G on H11x and the trace of G squared on H11x. So remember, our group G is acting on the Leech lattice, and we're identifying H11 with a piece of the Leech lattice. So for each of our 42 classes, we know these numbers. These are integers. And here's the general formula for the Hirzebruch genus of G. So it's this. So that's a global thing. Okay, but now what we want to do is compute it locally. That means fixed component by fixed component, and then identify the global version with the local version. And you get the local version by using the Atiyah-Singer theorem. Okay, so I'm not going to go.
How this G squared showed up in the calculation, because
I was naively thinking.
This one? Yeah, that's
what. Well, okay, so we're tracing over all HPQ, but it turns out that you can all the HPQs, or at least these traces, can be given in terms of these ones. That, because these higher HPQs in this case are like given by symmetric squares of this thing and things like that. So if we know the trace of G on here, we can deduce what it is on most on all the other cohomology groups. Yeah, it's a geometric fact about the about the nature of the HPQs for K3 or K3n. They're all sort of, it's rather complicated, but they're all symmetric powers in some way of K3, actually. If you actually,
so if we're going to go to K3 to the M, then you would need to go up to trace of G.
Yeah, you might need more. I think it can all be reduced to this again, but it will get more and more complicated.
But I would guess from what you just said that you would need to know the character of little g to the n on H1.
Sure.
Formula, you know, sort of the generalization of the symmetric product formula for characters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just probably from the orbital technology, I think.
Probably.
That would generalize.
There is, right? You can do this equivariant DMVV formula, as you know.
I mean, we're trying to decide when G acts. At the moment, we don't know whether it acts.
Right. But I mean, so, if I had a K3 with a G action,
right,
then I'm pretty confident that the usual formula, the orbifold reasoning would allow me to write a formula for this chi y g of x for any k3 in the n.
It's
maybe a bit more tricky from a geometric point of view because here you're looking at symplectic automorphisms of the hyper-Keller manifold. And
that's right.
In physics, you will look at symmetries of the nonlinear sigma model. And you would want to take symmetries which are not geometric from in K3, and then you want to deduce that they are geometric. I mean, I don't know if it is so simple in general. That they,
well,
even a non-geometric symmetry on K3, this corresponds to some geometric analog on your hyperkeller.
A symmetry of K3 will act on all the K3ns, if that's what you're...
I think what Professor is saying, something that looks geometric for K3 too may come from something non-geometric for K3, because otherwise...
Uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, because not, sure. Yeah, not all of these are induced by symmetries of K3.
We certainly couldn't eliminate the, I mean, it's, we needed a computer to decide whether these things exist. If G has prime order, the idea if G has prime order P, you can do this by hand and then you try to bootstrap up because you know all the powers inductively, whether they exist or not. Yeah. Point taken. In any case, let's go on. Okay, so the Atiyah Singer theory, so we take the fixed points under one of these alleged symplectic automorphisms. Generally, this is a finite set, but sometimes there's a component that's connected, and it will then be either itself a K3 or a complex two torus are the only possibilities, okay? And associated with each, let's just look at the fixed point. If I take an isolated fixed point, G will act on the tangent space because of the symplectic case, the symplectic form. Its eigenvalues are going to be sort of a pair of roots of unity like that, okay? So with every fixed point, we get a bunch of eigenvalues. Okay, if it's not connected, you have to deal with the normal bundle, but in it you end up with a pair of eigenvalues. But the bottom line is, with each connected component of this fixed subspace, of this set of fixed points, you get some local data consisting of some eigenvalues. Okay, and then Atiyah Singer Siegel is a very complicated formula, which I didn't even bother to write down in terms of Chern classes of this, that, and the other, which all comes down at the end of the day to things involving these polynomials, you get a very complicated expression that looks, you get a function of the eigenvalues at each connected component. You sum over the connected components, and this is equal to the equivariant chi y genus of our element little g. So this we know explicitly one way or another. This we do not really know because we don't know the eigenvalues exactly and what they are. Okay, there are only various possibilities. And in fact, sometimes there are many, many possibilities. And you try it. On the other hand, as I said, the case where G has prime order is by far the easiest. And if G doesn't have prime order, then you already know the fixed point data for the higher powers, because it turns out miraculously that very often this local data cannot ever be made consistent with that. It just does not work. And if it can be made consistent with that, there's a unique set of eigenvalues at each normal bundle that makes it work. It's amazing. Yes. In this context, for K32. So the topology is unbelievably sharp. So the bottom line is, for each of the 42 classes, we get equations that have to be satisfied, and there are a lot of consistency checks. And at the end of the day, what you find is that of the 42 classes where the rank of the fixed lattice is 4 or more, there are only 15 classes that could possibly work. Furthermore, those 15 classes are all realized on some K32. So the Atiyah Singer Hirzebruch formula, identity, if you like, gives exactly what classes you need, which I find really amazing. So, so the case of prime order and some others have been done by Mongardian Khmer. I'm not even sure how to pronounce her name even. Anyway, Khmer and Mongardian had done several of these cases before. And so this is pretty decisive, because now we've reduced to the case where we have a finite subgroup of the Conway group, and it only meets 15 conjugacy classes, there are only 15 possibilities. So that's a long calculation. A lot of the paper goes into that calculation. And it's all done on a computer, because, as I said, in some cases, there are hundreds of equations, I think, that have to be looked at and sieved and thrown out. And there's no way we could have done it by hand. Okay, so now we want to use group theory to classify the subgroups in here whose fixed sublattice is at least 4, and it only meets these 15 classes that meet the Atiyah-Siegel-Singer criteria. Okay, so G can be quite small. For groups of order power of 2 or 3 times the power of 2, we can't do it by hand. All the other cases we can do by hand. There are millions of conjugacy classes of groups, and I couldn't eliminate them all by hand. So, but the computer can do it. At least if you have Gerald Hearn working with you, because he's okay. So, so it turns out then that if you want a subgroup of the Conway group where the rank of the fixed sublattice at least 4, and only the 15 admissible classes meet G, then there are only 22 isomorphism classes that work. There are the 13 subgroups with at least 4 orbits. There are the 2 S lattice groups. And there's 2 groups of order 48 and 5 of order power of 2, which are still the stubborn groups. These do not show up at the end of the day, but they're still surviving this far.
So it's, what's the equivalent? Conjugacy, isomorphism or conjugacy in the Conway group?
These are isomorphism classes. I think there are several of them that are not conjugate, but the groups are isomorphic. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, in the middle paragraph, it's conjugacy.
Oh, there, the number of subgroups of the Conway group, the number of conjugacy classes of subgroups of order power of 2 is in the millions.
Uh-huh. But the ultimate theorem is not in terms of conjugacy. It's not classifying what's the conjugacy.
No, no, but we know it up to conjugacy. No. We want it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm almost running out of time since I promised to be finished by now. So we have to eliminate these groups. These are not going to act on a K32. Why is that? Well, they're actually necessary and sufficient conditions for a group to act on a K32, to act symplectically. Okay, and once you get to have these explicit groups, you have a chance to actually employ it. And the condition is that you have this invariant. You take the co-invariant lattice, you subtract its rank from 24, then you subtract this rank of the dual lattice mod the co-invariant lattice. And you want this to be at least 1. This is usually called alpha. And Mongardi, again, and various other people have sort of massaged these results, and that we get this isomorphism for some G precisely when this invariant's at least 1. So again, in the context of what I'm talking about today, I don't want to emphasize this, but it turns out that these groups fail that last criteria. Okay, this is 0 for those groups. Okay, so again, once we've eliminated these 2 groups because the alpha condition is not satisfied, we're left with the other 2 classes of groups and other ones that show up in the final theorem because there's an X for every such group. Okay, so I sort of picked a bizarre example here that we discovered that somehow hadn't been discovered before. The way you can do this is you take one of your groups G, okay? See, one of the ways you can get a K32 is by taking a smooth cubic in CP5, okay? So you can take your group G and put in generators and then ask the computer whether it leaves invariant a smooth cubic. So you take a group with a 6-dimensional representation. So in this case, I think I'm doing M10, which is one of the subgroups with 4 orbits. In
why is a cubic in CP5 a quadrilateral?
Say again?
A cubic in CP5 doesn't have vanishing first term class. What do you mean by this being a K32?
I think the zeros define a K32. No.
I was just reading about this. It's called the generalized Clavillon manifold.
Is this the mirror of a rigid?
It's related to the 1-6
Gettner model. But still, I mean, the first term class you calculate by the adjunction.
Yeah, but adjunction, the term class isn't 0. But
the middle homology forms the cohomology diamond of K3. It's a sub-diamond.
If you just talk about a Gettner model, I
think. Well, I mean, the point is there exists holomorphic, I think it's not a sweet.
I'm pretty.
It's a NM form, a holomorphic, a unique NM form.
But geometrically, this thing is not quadrilateral.
No, that's true.
Come on,
K3 is a quadrilateral.
Right.
No, but it's sufficient to describe that.
So you mean this describes the variational Hodge structure of some other K3?
Exactly. Yeah.
Fine. and we could probably
it may be deformation equivalent.
That is the same thing.
For certain problems, yes.
Deformation equivalent.
This is like Kandel's old papers.
Right, it's the same thing that, let's say, three tori also described by something like that.
Well, we put in the matrices, and the computer gave us this answer, and it is smooth, and Gerald was happy with this answer.
No, but the Hodge variation of the Hodge structure is the right one.
For some other K3G, yes. For some, which you could specify.
This is not a K3 versus.
No, it's obviously
this is not a K3.
I'm sorry, excuse me, it's not a Calabi-Yau manifold.
It's not a Calabi-Yau manifold, okay.
Manifold.
Oh dear. Is it deformation equivalent to a Calabi-Yau manifold?
The variation of Hodge structure is probably that of some other manifold that
you can construct. You got some bundle of K32s over a base space, and you can vary it.
Can you tell us what variation means and what information means for you?
Well, you have some sort of bundle where the fibers are these K32, and you can, in the family, so you have a whole family of them, and I think some of the, well, hopefully some of them will be Calabi-Yau, even if. Well, I don't know. I mean, apparently this isn't Calabi-Yau. Okay, let's hope this is not on video. This is in our preprint, so maybe. summary and prospects. From the perspective of symplectic automorphisms, there's a causal connection between K32 and even K3N and the Conway group and the Leech lattice, but the connection with M24 is simply incidental. M24 plays no compelling role whatsoever in what I'm doing, okay, and what we've done. So it does seem likely that this will work for all K3N, and the list of groups that will appear will certainly be not much bigger than the list we've already got. So, I mean, you could take the elliptic genus, this again, as far as from my limited understanding, this is in the chiral-Durham complex, meaning of elliptic genus, of a hypercalar manifold, and it's got n equal to 4 structure that depends on the hypercalar metric, so we could play this game of decomposing into modules for n equal to 4, and presumably, well, in fact, certainly, since these groups, these S-lattice groups, act on the elliptic genus, we should see that in the decomposition. But it's not M24. And I think that's probably all. Thank you, yes.
I guess there's a variant of this where you use the fact that H2 of Sn is non-trivial for n greater than, what, 3 or 4? So there's some discrete torsion version of these symmetric products of K3. Mm. If you want things to do, I guess it might be.
Is that a disconnected family of 4-4 models?
I think so.
H2 of S, it's just a discrete.
Yeah, I think it's Z2. I think it's
U1 coefficient.
H2, you don't mean H3, you mean H2.
H2 with U1 coefficient.
Yeah.
It covers discrete torsion, right?
That's yeah, but with U1 coefficients, right?
H3Z.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm sure. I haven't thought about it. I don't need any more things to do either. Did you have a question?
Yeah, so for large n, you think just two more groups? When you said a couple more, you meant two, or you meant?
I don't want to go on record.
Well, there's no video. Let's say there's no video.
Neither of us knows.
Well, I could. I let's see here. Where are the? You just take the subgroups here that. I mean, you can make these groups a bit bigger, and you can take a fixed sublattice and still have 4. And there's this one that's not on our list. You get this one and a few more that you can get and still maintain rank 4 when you take fixed points. That's it. You're going to be an M23, or it's going to be an S-lattice stabilizer. I think that's, I'd be shocked if that wasn't true. So
there's some work by Nikuling in the case where the K3 has some rational curves situation, so you can sort of make them singular by taking the volume of these rational curves to the zero, and then there he showed that you need other NEMA lattices, which are non-trivial root systems, in order to do the embedding instead of just the reach lattice. So do you see, like, probably the K3-2 or K3-3 or K3-N, you do this, you probably, do you expect the other NEMA lattice?
I would expect that the Leech lattice is the sort of the universal garbage can for which all constructions along these lines go. I mean, another thing you can do is like take K3 or hyper-Taylor manifolds or infinite characteristic. And I mean, people have looked at that, and you can get fixed up, and I think very similar connections still go through.
Sure, and then you get smaller rank.
You get smaller rank fixed sublattice. Yeah, you can get three for sure.
But I think Nikuling's work.
Yeah, I don't know. So he.
The
glued down some curve.
The rational curves correspond to the roots. So.
I don't know.
Okay, if there are no further questions, let's thank Jeff again.
Thank you.